You're listening to a DM podcast.
Let's go on a trip.
Let's go on a trip.
Yeah, baby.
It's not too bad. What was the question again?
Okay, let's go. I'm Angela Caterns.
I'm Ian Rogerson.
And welcome to Suddenly Senior. This is a podcast series for those of us who've reached a certain age in life.
That's right. You can join if you're not our age, but it'll be a lot more fun if you are.
So strap yourselves in, check your blood pressure, light your spliff.
Pour yourself a small bevy and let's go. Ivor Davies had an unusual path to pop star status. His musical training was classical. I think there was an oboe involved as well, and maybe some bagpipes. And he even did a little stint at the ABC Training Orchestra at one stage. But he went on to pioneer in Australia's electronic music scene with his band Ice House, clocking up a ton of hits here and in the US and in Europe. Ivor Davies, welcome aboard Suddenly Senior.
Thank you very much indeed.
Very nice to have you here. Do you ever think you'd see the day when you would be on a podcast called Suddenly Senior?
Look, I'm not in denial anymore. I think various bits are falling off, so why not?
You're on this platform. You are allowed to discuss your ailments if you have
it. Yeah, first up, we always do it. The first couple of minutes, you're allowed to say what's sore.
No. Well, everything's sore. I was thinking about this morning. I was thinking, you know, when I travel, because I've just got back from doing a show in North Queensland. And I have a very particular regimen whereby I have three sets of medication. So I have a set of medication, like my touring leather coat is really half a pharmacy. and then I have a whole duplicate set in my cabin bag in case my main case goes missing. And then I have, you know, my standard toiletry bag in my main case, which has a third set of exactly the same medication.
So you're covered.
So hopefully, in spite of all the airline's best efforts to lose everything that I'm carrying with me, if I have to overnight it somewhere, I've got the trusty pharmacy and the leather coat.
Excellent. And do the drugs help, Ivor?
I think I'd probably be dead without them.
Okay.
I think that's pretty true. God, it's interesting, isn't it? Such a change from the 80s, you know. You were worried about anybody finding the drugs, and now you want somebody to find the drugs so you can take them.
Yes. I'm thinking of having my medications regimen tattooed somewhere on me. So,
Although, can I say, you weren't a classic rock pig ever, really, were you, Ivor?
Oh, I kept quiet about it. I think that's probably.
You're always stylish.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. So you'll never know. I could have been a lot worse than I was. And I think quite early on, we kind of had our Sid Barrett type members, and they're a bit of a wake up call, I think.
Mm-hmm. You were a very early adopter of technology in music, weren't you? Can you tell us a little bit about that? I know you used a Fairlight. You must have been one of the, you know, first people to ever actually own one.
So the thing was, I mean, you lived through this period of the very late 70s and the early 80s, and a whole lot of things, apart from the fact that the Australian pub scene was sort of firing at a ridiculous rate. Mm. We just had Double J open up, which was incredibly influential. I remember just sitting for hours just listening to the radio, because that station, you know, DJs could play what they wanted to play. There was some incredibly interesting stuff being brought in on import. We had all that going on. But then we had also an incredible explosion in music technology. So it wasn't just, I'll get to the Fairlight in a second, but it was a whole bunch of stuff. So, for example, our first keyboard player came with a Mini Moog. Now, a Mini Moog was a revolutionary machine, but you could only play one note at a time on it. And then at the end of the 80s, there was a new contraption called a Prophet 5, and I've still got that Prophet 5, and it was revolutionary from two points of view. First of all, you could play a five-note chord on it, and you could also store your sounds in it as well, which previously you couldn't do. Our keyboard player had to dial up every sound that he wanted to use in between songs, so it was amazing. And then there was, of course, the Lindrum machine came along. Great Southern Land features, which is a song from 1981-82 of mine, features the Lindrum and a Prophet 5, which I still have. But then our management had offices up in King's Cross, and they were constantly being burgled by junkies, so this was a problem. So while I was away on tour, they decided to move their office, and it moved into the top, the upper story of a two-story building in Rushcutters Bay, and they called me in for a meeting, and I didn't get to the meeting upstairs because I got to the front door and there was a sign on it that said CMI Fairlight. And believe it or not, they gave me a guided tour, and I knew about these machines, these magical, mystical machines. And they took me out the back to where literally the whole bunch of engineers with soldering irons and circuit boards building them directly beneath our manager's office.
Wow.
And I went racing up to that meeting and I said, I cannot believe what they're doing downstairs and these machines, because they gave me, you know, a whole guided tour of what it could do. And I said, I have to have one that catches their $32,000. Now, I just bought a house in Sydney for $60,000. So that was
wow. That really is, that's a flashback in itself, isn't it?
That was half a house. So, yes, I got that Fairlight, and it became and remained my main workstation for right up until, I think, probably close enough to 1990. So that was a very long time for a piece of technology to be the kind of building blocks of your main workstation, as it were.
And Ivor, now that you're a senior, are you still up to date with technology? Are you still comfortable on computers? Are you adept at, you know, editing and photoshopping and all of that sort of stuff?
No, I've left the building some considerable time ago, and what I've become very, very good at is delegating, and so I know just enough to be dangerous and to talk to other technicians in a kind of way that makes me sound as if I actually know what I'm doing, when in actual fact I haven't got a clue.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got incredible people on our crew. We've been working with the same crew now for pushing 14 years, because we stopped playing for about 16 years, and then the thing that got us back on stage was our tour manager from 1986 came up with the idea of Sound Relief. I don't know whether you remember the concerts in Melbourne and Sydney running parallel as fundraisers. And he rang me up and I said, I've had this idea and Michael Gudinski is putting it all together. And by the way, in spite of the fact you haven't played for 16 years, you're headlining Sydney. And
were you scared?
You're terrified. And also recognizing at that point, my daughter would have been 14 or 15 and my son was about 12 or 13 and they'd never seen us play. As I kept all that quiet while they were growing up. I think I stopped touring when my first child was 6 weeks old and just, you know, completely stopped. And so they never really saw, I'm sure they didn't have a clue what I actually did. But during that time, I wrote a ballet and I did a whole bunch of other stuff. But you know, that wrote the piece for the Millennium, but they'd never seen a full-blown concert. So that was the first time. You know, so that was the SCG, they were there in amongst 40,000 people.
And seeing their dad. I mean, it's amazing that moment where the penny drops with your kids, where they actually go, oh, my God, you're not that lame ass who sits around the house all day. You used to do things.
Well, I don't know quite what they were thinking. It was a really strange night because it was absolutely pouring with rain. I mean, driving rain. And when they came backstage after we'd come off, I mean, they looked like two drowned rats for a start. But the look on their faces was just complete shock.
Oh. Were they proud of you?
I think shock was more in operation than pride. I just don't think they actually kind of believed what they'd just seen. But anyway, we've been working with the same crew ever since, and that crew are incredible, really, because they're operating these days incredibly sophisticated computerized mixing consoles and LED screens and computerized visuals, and yeah, it's become very, very, very highly technical, and I couldn't keep up with that stuff even if I tried. And it's kind of pointless, really, because they're such specialized jobs that you just really have to rely on having fantastic people around you.
You're a very atmospheric muso, though. I've got to say, Ivor, I remember you playing in the 80s when it was Flowers Becomes Ice House and all that sort of stuff, and there were smoke machines going and The Ice House itself, that song was so atmospheric, and you've sort of kept that going in a way into your film music as well. And you know, you mentioned the ballet as you do great pop songs, but at the same time, you like a bit of mood.
The thing about it is, when you've got the great sort of backdrop of all the classical music that's ever been composed and a huge variety, every now and again I'll haul out something. I've got this relationship with my, here we are, this is a senior moment, with my physiotherapist, who is, he's probably nearly my age, if I'd be truthful about it, and he's an incredibly keen student of music, but mainly popular music, I guess, probably of the kind of folk acoustic guitar type idiom. And I've been feeding him bits of classical music, which is a foreign world for him. And every now and again, I'll feed him something and go, have a listen to this. This is a suite of pieces by Modest Mussorgsky called Pictures at an Exhibition. And when you hear it, you'll hear large slabs of the Harry Potter music written by John Williams, because it was so influential. And, of course, these pieces of music have all that atmosphere that you're talking about. These incredible composers over the years, you know, Richard Strauss and Claude Debussy, and who literally painted pictures. So Debussy, of course, known as probably the greatest impressionist composer of all time, abandoned the classical forms like the symphony, and he started producing these big slabs of music, which he referred to as tone poems, one of the most famous being La Mer, the Sea. You get incredible pictures out of this music. You can see the rippling waves. You can hear the impending storm coming, you know, the great gusts of wind, and then the angry sea crashing against the headland and all this stuff. But, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it's sort of no great mystery, really. When you've got all that repertoire of atmospheric music, that, you know, that becomes part of the set of possibilities for even a popular song.
Yeah.
When I started out, of course, we kind of stumbled straight into the hardest core punk period that probably ever existed. And for a start, I wasn't ever going to tell anybody that I was a highly trained classical musician, since Johnny Rotten was saying the exact opposite, that in fact, to qualify for a punk band, you'd have to not be able to play any instrument at all. So it's taken a while for me to kind of come out, as it were, as a classical musician. And certainly it took vehicles like the ballets, the film scores and so on to have, you know, the full outlet of things that I could apply atmosphere to. But somewhere along the way, a lot of those little bits snuck into songs. I remember exactly where we debuted the song Ice House. It was at the Eastwood Hotel. Now, the Eastwood Hotel wasn't a big hotel on the kind of circuit of pub bands back then. And I think we only ever played there this one night. And originally the song Ice House didn't have all the big guitars joining it at the end. It was just synthesizer and drums. And it was a fairly hardcore, dressed in black, you know, razor blades and safety pins type punk audience. And I remember thinking, we are going to get absolutely slaughtered for playing this thing, because up to that point, we'd been playing hard and fast guitar music, and then suddenly everything stopped and it was just synthesizers and a drum kit. But we survived, and I made the addition of the loud guitars at the end as a kind of afterthought, really. But yeah, we thought at the time, this is an incredibly dangerous thing to do.
Hey, Iva, a previous guest on this podcast spoke about her mortality clock, which was she had reached a certain age and then she was starting to, you know, count down what she thought were the years that she had left. Have you ever thought about that?
No, I don't think of it in those terms. I think of it in a far more random way. You know, I worked for many, many, many decades with a fellow who I considered to be my best friend, and he was my music editor on Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, that very big film score that I did. And then he randomly got cancer and died. And so I don't think of it in the kind of logical countdown sense, because there is no logic in the countdown. It can be, you know, I walk out this morning, get hit by a bus or whatever. So I tend not to try and dwell on that, because I think it's far more random.
It's quite fragile, isn't it?
Is there anything you fear about getting old?
Well, certainly, I watched both of my parents deteriorate, and my mother was bedridden for 3 years, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. You know, I think I prefer the bus kind of outcome, really.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's where, you know, touring for you, Ivor, will keep you young, I would guess. I mean, you're about to embark at this point in time on another wide Australian tour. And also, strangely enough, there's a little bit of history in there too, because you're doing the Opera House forecourt on December the 12th, something I guess you would have done the Opera House a number of times. The Opera House itself has just turned 50. So you playing there is also a part of history.
Here's the other thing that you may not know, was that we were actually scheduled to play on the Opera House forecourt on December the 12th last year. And in November, I got COVID.
Wow.
And we had to blow out the four biggest shows of the year, one being the Melbourne Meyer Music Bowl, and the last one of the year, the 12th of December, the Opera House, which broke my heart.
Oh.
All of the beginning of this year, I was praying and praying and praying and praying that we would get a spot at the Opera House, because the Opera House is booked out for years into the future. So it's not that easy to kind of ring them up and go, oh, excuse me, can we have Wednesday? Yeah. It's a kind of full circle moment for me, because it's exactly the same date a year later.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, and so do you take any measures to stay fit? I think I read somewhere that you play golf. Do you still?
Yes, I do regularly, and I'm incredibly bad at it. And fortunately, I have just exactly the right temperament, and I play with predominantly one fellow who's got exactly the right temperament too, which is that we are fairly liberal with the rules, and the whole exercise is more about kind of mental health than anything else, which it's an incredibly beautiful, tiny little course with lots of wildlife, and it stares out over the water, and it's incredibly sort of mentally therapeutic. And I actually crave, you know, when I've been away for, say, a weekend like the one I've just done, where I've been focused on working and everything's leading towards that show on Saturday night, watching my blood pressure for the first time, because I've got a brand new blood pressure monitor, which is incredibly portable.
Wow. And, so it's not, is there any fallback on the blood pressure monitor?
Well, the thing is, I've never actually measured it in the hours leading up to going on stage. And it was kind of terrifying, because it sort of went through the roof, and I had no idea that that was actually going on in my body. But anyway, I guess what I'm getting towards is it's an incredible amount of kind of mental preparation and anxiety and adrenaline that sort of goes into stepping onto a stage. And then, of course, you've got the 2 hours plus or whatever of that sort of concentration. And then the next day, of course, as this one was, it was a very big travel day. So it involved two flights, took all day, and I didn't get home until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Having sort of regrouped last night, what I will be doing today is getting out on a golf course and kind of mentally, debriefing, I guess, is probably the way to put it.
They say it spoils a good walk, though, golf.
Well, only if you let it, really. I think that's, you know, I've played with some people who take it incredibly seriously, and I watch them, and it's kind of soul-destroying, really. Mm. You know, to get angry at a golf ball is the biggest waste of time and effort I think you could possibly ever apply. You know, I watch the ducks. You know, that's what I do.
Yeah. Nice. I like that.
So, Ivor, is there anything that you are looking forward to about becoming an old man? Do you think your children will look after you as you get older? Have you got grandkids?
I've just become a grandfather. Yes. I think I've learned to be pretty kind of independent over the last, especially 15, 14 years. I have a long-term partner. We don't live together, and so it works particularly well. And she gets to go off and see all sorts of exotic places because I'm still on tour. So that's one of the good things about being on tour. We've been to some incredible places this year. So we played the Big Red Bash, which was out
at
beyond Birdsville. Mm. So this is to 15,000 people. It's referred to as the most remote festival in the world. It's in the middle of the desert. It's incredible. And then 2 weeks later, we played the Monday Bash, which is probably the second most remote festival in the world, in South Australian deserts. You know, when we play these incredible places, it's a privilege. I just sort of think, wow, this is a great way to see Australia.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And also, you get to see it from a completely different perspective than most people just during the tourism thing, don't you? You get to know the locals and all the people behind it.
Yeah, you do meet some amazing people, and I don't know how these events actually kind of started, because it is really the maddest idea possible to expect that, you know, 13,000, 15,000 people are all going to arrive in their camper vans and their mobile homes and build a kind of a temporary city, and then watch music for 5 days or whatever, however long it goes, in the middle of nowhere. It's incredible.
I'm just wondering, what are the superpowers that experience and age have given you, Ivor?
For me, the most useful thing is I can see some things coming. The experience will kind of go, okay, I've been here before. I can add up all the possibilities that are going to happen. This comes down to a simple thing. For example, this might sound strange, but I said to my daughter's partner, I sent him a text, and he was going in to see Paul McCartney on Friday night. And I said, look, I've got a little sense of this based on information that I've got from various sources and so on and so forth, that you might be better off considering public transport to get there. And so I got a text back from my daughter the next day going, that was the most unbelievable concert I've ever been to. The line from the car park only started moving at 2:30 in the morning.
It's called wisdom.
That's
and experience.
And I thought to myself, one of these days you may learn to listen to what I've actually said.
Fantastic.
Could save you a bit of mucking around.
And you're touring with Simple Minds, I think,
yeah,
too.
Simple Minds.
We're touring with Simple Minds next year, so that'll be fantastic, because Jim and I go back a long way. And in actual fact, I've got this sort of magnetic wall in my kitchen with all these photographs up on it, and at least two of them are us wandering around Notting Hill in our 20s.
Both of you look absolutely gorgeous. I've seen those old black and white photos. Divine. Hey, Ivor, it's been a delight to chat. Thank you so much for joining us on Suddenly Senior.
Thanks, Ivor. What a pleasure.
Thank you. See you.
Please like and also subscribe.
Thank you for listening. I'm Angela Caterns.
I'm Ian Rogerson.
Leave a comment, as long as it's nice. If it's not,
that's right.
Fuck off.
Yes. See you next time, Ange.
Bye. And I want wine with my meds.